This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host, and we're joined by Jonathan Saya of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, watching the Islamic Republic of Iran during this period in between the war fighting and the return of all the hostages, the so-called ceasefire, which has been broken already. But the larger story is the driver of all of this violence for the last 2 years, Iran. This headline from Jerusalem: Khamenei tells Trump to, quote, keep dreaming, end quote, that the U.S. strikes destroyed Iran's nuclear sites. The Supreme Leader rebuffs U.S. President's appeal for negotiations, calling his, Mr. Trump's, interventions, that's a quote, in Islamic Republic's nuclear program, quote, inappropriate, wrong, and coercive. Jonathan, a very good evening to you. The suspect nuclear weapons program, it was struck by B-2 bombs in June, is presumed very badly damaged. I have heard estimates of 2 to 3 years to repair it. What is your understanding of why the Supreme Leader is choosing this moment to trash talk Donald Trump? Is this a game? Is he stalling? Where is he going with this? Good evening to you, Jonathan.
Good evening to you. It is a very precarious moment for the Islamic Republic. When we talk about Khamenei's speeches, the Supreme Leader, it has really two main audiences, but it's primarily for internal consumption. Oftentimes when he speaks and he gives his lecture, it does follow a domestic propaganda narrative. Oftentimes the diplomatic machine of the Islamic Republic, if they want to compel or send a message to Europeans or foreigners, it is done through diplomatic channels more often. So these speeches that we hear from Khamenei a lot of times are meant to boost morale amongst regime supporters that have increasingly been less optimistic about the future of the Islamic Republic. But ultimately, as we discuss nuclear matters related to Iran, the main issue is the status of the enriched uranium that we're still not sure where it is.
Bill, you have a question for Jonathan.
Hello, Jonathan. Over the weekend, you reported that one of Iran's prominent nuclear scientists, who's also the president of a university, he stated that the Iranian regime, quote, has the capability and capacity to build a nuclear bomb, end quote. What is the context in which he is talking about this? Is he referring to Iran's capability and capacity post-strikes, or what is he getting at here?
Ultimately, we have to ask ourselves, why is it that the Islamic Republic is actually publishing this stream of information related to the nuclear material? And it comes down to one main point, which is to cast doubt in the mind of Western politicians. Because this doublespeak of we have the capacity, but the Supreme Leader told us not to pursue nuclear weapons, but we should have pursued nuclear weapons, but at this point we're not going to, but that might change later on. Again, it's basically conveying two very opposing narratives. And the idea is for the average Western politician that's following Iran not to exactly know what the calculus is inside Tehran. But what really stood out from that conversation is them backtracking what the Supreme Leader had said, saying that although the Supreme Leader had verbally banned or declared them as religiously not permissible, that might change. So more and more, the point of the article that I wrote was to signal that this time around, their ambition of weaponization is much more overt than covert.
The Gaza ceasefire, the Lebanon mysteries, the Shara in Damascus, and then the Houthis apparently observing the ceasefire and not firing any new missiles. Does this all suit Tehran, or are they losing control of their surrogates?
The best way to describe Tehran's status in the region right now is to describe it as a lose-lose scenario. So on one hand, of course, they were able to so the ceasefire does allow Hamas a bit of a breathing room, if you will. So, but on one hand, Tehran does not necessarily like stability. Tehran would like its proxies to continue to destabilize the region. So if you want to look at specifically the Hamas situation, even the ceasefire that was reached and the summit that followed, Tehran was not a part of it to begin with. So they cannot play the propaganda narrative in any way that they had any control over their proxies in the last few months. So if you're really a regime official sitting in Tehran looking at the region, you see your weakened proxies, As you mentioned, Shara is not taking over Syria. Hamas is much weaker. Hezbollah is much weaker. But the Houthis are attacking on. And Tehran is under snapback sanctions. So ultimately, you see this as a situation where, of course, the pressure is amplifying, but it might also be seen as a breathing room for you to rearm some of these proxies. But ultimately, it comes down to whether there's another war with Israel on the horizon between Tehran and Jerusalem, and whether these proxies would step in this time, unlike last time.
Bill, you have a question.
Yeah, to follow up on that, John, so is it in Iran? You know, I realize it's not a zero-sum game. As you mentioned, the Iranians want instability, constant instability, want Iran, Israel to be under pressure. But on the other hand, survival, I think the Iranians can realize they probably lost this round. But the survival of these proxies to be used at a later date is also important. Do you think that Iran, what side does Iran come down here ultimately? Is it better to continue the fighting, or does it want a preservation of Hamas at the end of the day?
You're right to point out that the strategy here comes down to one point, is that as long as there's a foundation left to build upon, they will absorb all the attacks in their perspective, because they have all these natural resources, Iranian natural resources, such as oil, that they're selling illegally. So in their perspective, as long as China keeps buying this oil, they can continue to arm these militias, but they need a foundation. And had the war went on, there may have been no foundation for them to build upon when we talk about Hamas in this context. So I think what would really best suit Tehran's ambitions is fighting until the very last bit of foundation, room for breathing, rearm, and then relaunch again. Because ultimately, the Islamic Republic is not concerned with the lives of Hamas members or Harakat Nojaba inside Iraq or Hezbollah. Ultimately, as long as they can recruit younger and younger people as time goes on, they think they can rearm. So it seems like now they're in the breathing and rearming stage.
What do we know about Tehran's relations with Beijing? Are they good? Are they solid? Are they unknown?
It's challenging to describe them as an ally the same way we see it, for example, a transatlantic alliance. It's more of a strategic partnership. I think the question is now with snapback in place, which is the full reimposition of UN sanctions that China signed on, are they going to continue importing Iranian oil, or do they fear repercussions? They also look at how Tehran's relationship with Moscow is being perceived by Europeans. If China thinks that Tehran and Moscow are going to increase cooperation and there continues to be no repercussions, then that's a green light for Beijing to continue this. But the relationship is more than just economic. It's also continues to aid the Tehran's repression apparatus against its own populace by importing the technology used to track activists, surveillance, artificial intelligence, things of that nature. So it is really up to Beijing to not allow this regime to stay afloat, and comes down to sanctions enforcement by Washington, whether they're going to really aggressively impose these sanctions and implement them or not. Because what we've seen about oil import and export numbers is that under Trump, they're actually very high, even compared to Biden.
Bill, ISIS and Al-Qaeda, do they still have refuge in Iran?
The Islamic State is an enemy of the Iranians. They would never cooperate, at least as things stand now. But Al-Qaeda certainly does have a safe haven inside of Iran. Its leader, Saif al-Adel, is believed to be living in Iran to this date. And numerous Iranian leaders have sought shelter and have conducted operations from Iranian soil. There's multiple dozens, or should I say handfuls, of Iranian operatives that the U.S. government has listed as specially designated global terrorists who are currently operating in Iran to this date.
Bill Rajo and Jonathan Saya of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.